Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hello and welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. My name is Heather Cho. I'm here with Mark Johnston. I am super pumped today, Mark. I am coming with a lot of energy, so watch out, okay? Why? Because there's a lot of both good and darkness going on. And so that always sets me into a fiery mood. So today I think that's going to be really applicable for what we're talking about here on The Thriving Marriage, how to terminate your divorce process for good. All right. And I want to thank you guys for coming back here to The Thriving Marriage Podcast. We are the number one resource for marriages in the world. And it is our mission to help save millions of marriages and help you truly thrive. So thank you for joining us in that mission. So in this episode, we're going to share with you our proven process to end divorce faster than you probably think it can be saved, and how we've helped over 12,000 clients now save their marriage with this exact process. And I want to make sure that you guys stay to the end, because I'm going to share three simple steps that you can take right now that will determine your success or your failure in ending this divorce process. Before we get to that though, let's share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yes. So our client win of the week, this person is saying she has had a win. He wants to work on our marriage and relationship again. We both agree we have a long road ahead of us to repair and grow from what brought us to the brink of divorce. I'm hopeful for our future and grateful for the guidance and mindset help I've gotten through this course so far. This is the first time since last January that my husband has made any declaration that he's willing to try. That's kind of like the topic of today. Like, how do we even get to this point? We see these kind of stories all the time, and it's usually because there's a few things that can be done to slow the process of separation or divorce, to start turning things around. And, you know, a few mistakes that a lot of people make in this process that tends to push their partner away. And, you know, Heather, you and I, we found like, hey, if we can address a couple of these things, there's some decent chance that, you know, something can work here and we can get to this point right here. Right.
Yeah. She was on the brink of divorce. Right. And so you guys listening to this may be in that same place. Let me know if you would love to get to where she is now, where your spouse is saying, hey, I'm willing to try. I'm willing to work on this. And that's exactly what we help our clients do. Most of you start at what we call like stage one, where your spouse is completely checked out. They're not willing to work on the marriage with you. They're wanting a divorce. They're having an affair. They say things like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I'm in love with someone else. And so we guide you from stage one to stage two, stage three, and then ultimately to stage four. So what we're talking about today is definitely for those in stage one. Your spouse is threatening divorce. They're talking to lawyers. Maybe they already have divorce papers in the works. Maybe you already have a date set. And so if that is you, then this podcast is especially for you. So really make sure that you pay attention. Now, Mark, over in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group, we asked a question. We asked you guys, what do you think is the one thing that could save your marriage? So if there's one thing that could save your marriage, what would it be? As you're listening to this live, leave a comment. Let me know, what do you think is the one thing that would save your marriage? If there was one thing, what would it be? So leave a comment, put it in the chat. We'd love to hear from you and see where you are at. And we had over 127 comments on this in only 17 hours in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And there was a broad spectrum of answers, as you can imagine. I saw a lot of things about faith, a lot of things about God, a lot of things about honesty. And then I would say that there was at least 50 or 60% of people saying that my spouse needs to change something in order for our marriage to be saved. They need to be honest. They need to not cheat. They need to respect me. they need to end the divorce. I need a miracle, right? I need my wife or my husband to show they care, communication, intimacy, spending time. They need to give me a chance. I saw a lot of those. They need to at least be willing. And so because it's at least 50 or 60% of you are saying that my spouse needs to do something in order for this to work, I want to address that right off the bat. And I understand where it's coming from. But at the same time, we all know that we cannot control what another person does. And if you are expecting your spouse to be the one that changes or wants to work on the marriage or is going to somehow come around at this point, then you are left with just a miracle and a hope and a prayer. You're out there wishing and hoping that they're somehow going to do something about it. And maybe you're feeling a little hopeless. Maybe you're feeling a little powerless. And I hear this a lot, and I felt this myself. When your spouse is pulling away, when they're wanting a divorce, it often feels like they're holding all the cards. You guys agree? It feels sometimes like you have no control over this situation. They're calling all the shots and they've got all the power in this situation. And what Mark and I have proven by helping over 12,000 marriages now is that that is not true. Okay. And so we're going to share with you this process here of how to terminate your divorce process for good. And there's a couple important things. So make sure that you don't miss any one of these, because if you're missing one of these, I can guarantee that you're not going to get great results. And if you haven't had your spouse hit the pause button, which is what we want to accomplish here with stage one, is have your spouse hit the pause button, then my friends, you've missed something. Okay. And it's okay. It's okay to say, I've missed something along the way. What I've been doing hasn't been working, but now we can start to learn what actually works. So Mark, there are some really common mistakes that we see people make when a divorce is filed. And I'll be the first to raise my hand and say I've made many of these. I have not had a divorce filed in my marriage though, but there have been, you know, talks or consideration of it at some points. And so when your spouse is pulling away, these are really common. But we want to make sure that we recognize if we're making any of them so that then we can learn what to do instead. And sometimes we don't realize that we're making some of these. Sometimes we're unintentionally pushing our spouse further away. So Mark, what do you see are some really common mistakes that people make when divorce is filed or there's talk of divorce?
Well, I want you guys, all of you out there to think about this. Think about how you felt when your partner said, okay, I'm thinking about leaving, or they've said, I'm ready to get a divorce. I'm considering anything along those lines. Like Heather, like you said, you know, it's in my own marriage, nothing that's ever been filed, but the topic has come up once or twice. And Jen and I, we're in a really good place now, and we always take care of those sort of issues. But I can recall those moments and I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, putting myself in those moments. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I felt a lot of things. I felt a lot of things right there. Whether this is some indignation, like, well, you know, okay, you're upset, huh? Well, what about me? I'm upset too. There's just a lot of feelings, and I imagine a lot of you can relate to that, whether that's some anger, sadness, or whatever, whether you were responding with accusations yourself, or whether you're getting defensive, like, well, no, you know, you're saying that I'm doing this. Well, what about you? What are you doing? Or maybe, you know, this is not sometimes a favorite of mine, you know, some stonewalling where I just go really quiet and I need to process things for a bit and I don't want to say anything. It can also come out as criticism or contempt. And I'm saying those words. And if you guys have really paid attention, if you've gone into the research, you'll recognize some of those things: defensiveness, stonewalling, criticism, contempt. Those are Gottman's four horsemen of divorce. Like he's saying, hey, if those things are present, it's a good predictor that things are heading towards divorce, and there's a good reason. Now, I mean, I'm adding a few others onto that list in terms of reactions to hearing your partner talk about divorce. You know, but in general, if there's a lot of intense negative emotions or some of these actions, the Gottman's four horsemen, it's a mistake. your partner is moving towards divorce because they are hurt. You might also be hurt, and that's valid. But I'm going to point out that all of these responses are dismissive of your partner's feelings in some way. Now, would it be great if you could get your feelings addressed as well? That would be awesome. I mean, that's how Jen and I have gotten through those really tough moments where we're like, hey, is this worth going forward together? And ultimately we conclude yes, because you know what? That's like one of Jen and my superpowers is we can like calm down and then we can listen to each other and then we can work things out. But you know, if that's not going on, it's going to accelerate the process. If your partner's not feeling heard, if you're responding in anger with a lot of defensiveness, a lot of accusations, intense negative emotions, I talked to actually more than one person recently where the response was threatening to hurt themselves in response. And you know what? That really pushed them further away. Mm. It's that desperation that was really, really driving this need to step away from the situation. You know, I've talked a bit about like this anger and this accusations. Like I said, that sadness is also a really big, it's going to put a lot of fuel on the fire here. If we go towards that sadness and you start begging and pleading and demanding that they stay because you're so, you can't live without them. And I mean, I get it. I want to have a lot of sympathy towards that situation. It's a big deal. And yet a lot of those responses don't take into account how your partner feels either. Right. They're focusing on you. Yeah.
They're focusing on you and what you need. And I get it. We're all like, we talk about the ego and narcissism, whatever. We're all selfish creatures. And that's part of being human. Okay. So let's take the shame out of that. But we're really, if we're wanting to have a relationship, right, this co-creative process, the focus naturally tends to be immediately on ourselves, protecting ourselves, getting what I need, wanting you to change so I can feel better, needing you to change so that this will work for me. And it is not taking into account how our partner feels and what they're going through and what they really are needing here.
Exactly. I listed it as two different types of mistakes, but I think it's mostly the same sort of thing, whether it's like a lot of anger and accusations, a lot of like, you did this, or whether it's me, I'm sad, I need you in my life, please stay with me. Either way is going to push your partner further away. You said it really well there, Heather. You're saying, hey, that begging, that pleading, that sadness is a lot of focus on yourself. And I'm sorry, but if your partner is saying, hey, I'm considering divorce, I don't think that they're going to respond very favorably if you're saying, well, what about me? Because you know what? They're hurting. It will repel them. It will push them further away. So basically, those intense emotions, Heather, I mean, you know, we talk about a lot about emotions, how saying, hey, emotions need some space. They're valid.
Right.
We need to make sure that we pay attention to those emotions. But I'm going to say, hey, like the best response here is responding to those emotions, like thinking about how you want to handle them rather than reacting. And I think we've said that, you know, somewhere there in the over the many years here we've been doing this, right?
Oh, just a little bit. Just a little bit. It's only like the main thing I focus on, my friends, if you've ever followed us for a while. So I just want to make it really clear. We're not saying don't feel what you're feeling or that your feeling is bad. But what we are saying is what we teach our clients to do. And we are not taught how to do this. We are not taught how to process through our emotions. and how to have a healthy expression of anger, a healthy expression of sadness, a healthy expression of fear or betrayal or pain, and sometimes even a healthy expression of joy or bliss or gratitude. Sometimes we even have unhealthy expressions of those things. So society has programmed us to fail, okay? Basically has not taught us how to process emotions well and how to have a good, healthy relationship, how to do this co-creative process we're talking about here, where we both understand what the other person's needing and we're willing to meet each other's needs. Society hasn't taught us that. So if your marriage is on the brink of divorce or really struggling in any way, I just want you to know it's not really your fault, because society's programmed us to fail. That's why over 50% of marriages are ending in divorce, and only 8% of couples that stay together even say that they're happy. So the majority of people out there are going into relationships and without the tools, without the knowledge, without the internal calm and sense of well-being and all those things, that it really programs us to fail. So feel what you're feeling, but learn how to process through those emotions instead of reacting out of them. That's what we're taught. That's what we're modeled. That's what society taught you to do. That's what your parents taught you to do. And then they shamed you for feeling those emotions and then reacting out of them. So then you taught yourself not to feel those emotions or think that they were bad. So feel your emotions. As an example, I've been deeply hurt and feeling an intense amount of betrayal just this past little while. And this morning, I just felt that rage, and I felt that anger, and I leaned into it. Okay. I love to run on the treadmill in the morning because it's super cold here in Colorado. So I don't like to go outside because I'm a baby, but I got on the treadmill and I'm like, all right, here it goes. This is the healthy outlet here, right? I'm on the treadmill and I crank that baby up and I'm flying. And I just feel all of that anger and that rage on the outside. Like, you know, no one knows. Inside, I'm like, inferno, right? And I just embrace the fullness of that emotion so that it can move through me. I've said this before, but the root word of emotion is in motion, the Latin root, in motion. So let those emotions move through you. So that rather than like resisting this pain, resisting this anger, resisting this deep sense of hurt and betrayal, I'm allowing it to move through me so that, oh, did we lose me for a second? Sorry. I'm allowing those emotions, yeah, to move through me like water. Like that's what I envision. Like I am just a conduit of energy and I get to let this move through me. I process through this so that I don't then go into the situation and react with all of that intensity of emotion. I can process through it and then I can decide, okay, that was very hurtful. And now what am I going to do about it? How do I want to show up in this moment? Who do I really want to be? And where do I really want to go? What's the outcome that I'm wanting here? And how is the best way for me to show up to achieve that outcome? And when I do that, I can show up with so much love, so much centeredness, so much presence, even gratitude and compassion. It puts me in a state of, I can see the other person's side here, and it can give me a sense of empathy, which we're going to go into, right? And it's less about me and all of what I'm going through and how you hurt me and I'm going to blame you and be defensive, or I'm going to beg you to change and oh, woe is me. You know, I put all of that drama down and I'm able to move closer to who I really want to be and the result that I really want to gain from this experience. And that's one of the biggest shifts I think that we help people make here, especially at stage one, when your partner's pulling away, is shift you out of the state of intense fear, intense anger, intense betrayal, intense pain, so that then we can get to a place that feels like I'm okay no matter what happens. And I can see this in a new way. Okay. And I love it when our clients are able to process through those emotions and get to that place, because the reality is that everything you're wanting, everything you think you want out here from your partner, from circumstances, from life, is not found without out there. It's only found within yourself. And when you get to that place, you become like a rock in a storm that cannot be moved. And you are truly in your power. And yes, then that goes into what needs to happen here, right? It gets you to a place where you can come at this situation, at this challenging, hurtful thing, but you can do it with a sense of calmness and a sense of of empathy and compassion even. So Mark, let's talk about those calm, measured responses that our clients are able to get to, which changes everything for them, right? Mm-hmm. Not only do you feel so much better because you feel, I can only think of the word as like serene a little bit, even in the midst of a storm, and you feel empowered, like you reclaim your power, like reclaim your personal power instead of blasting out all of this emotional vomit everywhere and causing even more chaos. It's like we take control over what we have control over, and we realize we have more control than we thought we had. That feeling of helplessness, that you don't have any say here, is not the case at all. And we do it in a way that really works.
You mentioned a couple of things, like you're talking about, like the goal is a bit like this serene sort of state. I sometimes compare it to like a safe harbor, or you mentioned also like this kind of term, like being a rock. But, you know, I do think that like a really good place to be is where you can be the one that can receive emotions from your partner, and you're not going to get rocked by it. The goal here is, you know, if we're talking about how do we actually stop the divorce process, the goal here is to help your spouse feel understood. And as you're mentioning here, a big piece of that is, hey, are you ready? Are you able to receive some of your partner's emotions, some of their thoughts, like all that hurt, and not get like not react to it and respond in kind? You absolutely need to learn what led to this decision, because if you can't, they're not going to feel understood. You know, I talk to so many people, and to be honest, you know, I'll start talking to them about, okay, well, you know, what's going on? Why is your partner considering divorce? And they're like, well, and they give me some surface level answer, like, well, you know, she said we didn't get out on enough dates. Or, you know, I remember a personal friend of mine saying that, you know, one of the things that led to the divorce, this person's divorce, was their partner didn't bring them the right kind of chocolate home from a trip.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, here's the thing, like stuff like that might, I mean, we're kind of chuckling at it. It might seem like the small thing. And that's why, like, I'm saying, hey, don't just take these surface level answers.
Yes.
Because a lot of this, there's, you know, we can't just consider what's going on right now. That chocolate bar was this like symptom. It was like this thing that happened right in the moment, but it had a lot of significance to it. And it was like another piece of evidence and a long line of pieces here that ultimately signified, I don't matter, that, you know, my partner doesn't listen to me. And that's what we're trying to get at, like the depth of the issue and like the breadth, like how encompassing this is. And if your partner feels like, hey, this person understands me, they understand how deeply painful this is for me, you're going to do a lot better in this process. Because, you know, if you have that understanding, it really can instill quite a bit more hope. You understand what the problem is, you can do something about it.
Right. So I want to do a little bit of analogy here. So we call this the narrative, and it's something that we have really talked about that really no one else is out there, because we've uncovered that unless we help your spouse let go of the story that they have about you, then they will not come back. Even if you make all the positive changes, even if you can reduce the tension, even if you can become friends and talk about anything, they will still hold on to that story because it's a self-defense mechanism, or it's excusing them so that they don't have to feel as much guilt or pain for what they're doing. And so it's like the tip of the iceberg. So as you're listening here, think about the things that your spouse has said, the reasons why they're wanting out. Let me know in the comments what those are, because we can help you uncover what might be beneath those. It's like the tip of the iceberg, but what's actually beneath that is a whole mountain of story, of reasons that they've built up this belief about you over the past weeks, months, and sometimes years, sometimes even decades. We've helped couples that have been married for decades, you know, older couples, empty nesters that have decades of story built up about this other person and about the relationship. And that can sound really maybe insurmountable or impossible to overcome, but it's actually not, because at the root of this mountain are a very few needs. And we all have the same needs. And there are about six common core emotional needs that all of us are wanting and all of us are needing. And my friends, I think it will astound you when you realize right now you might be feeling like my partner and I, like we could not be further apart. We could not possibly be wanting the same things at all. There is no way that they're wanting what I'm wanting. Look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing to me. If they're wanting the same thing, they wouldn't be doing that, right? And so you feel like you're on like polar opposite ends of the universe, right? And it would astound you to realize that at the heart of what you are both wanting, you are wanting actually very much the same things. You're going about it in very different ways. But when you realize why they're doing what they're doing, what led to this decision, then your partner will feel understood and validated, and their defense mechanisms will start to come down. And when this happens, that is when they will hit the pause button and they will not be pulling further away from you, because all of the things that maybe you've been doing up until this point, the begging, the pleading, the desperation, the angry reactions, the blaming, the criticism, the contempt, that's been pushing them further away. And if they're already out, then all your demands to work on things or change or to make, you know, meet your needs are only going to be pushing them further away. But when you can take a step back and hit that pause button, right, and take the pressure off and actually validate where they're coming from, understand where they're coming from, and realize that at the root of who you both are, like your souls, you both want the same things, that's going to cause them to hit that pause button, which is the very first indicator that Mark and I look at that the relationship is now moving in the right direction. Okay. Is your marriage completely saved? No. That's why we have step 2, 3, and 4, which we're not going to go into today, but you can learn more about it in our masterclasses, in our podcast, right? And in our coaching program, of course, we guide you through every single one of those phases. But if your spouse hasn't hit the pause button yet, then you've missed something. So you need to really lean into this and understand the dynamic that's going on here and what you can do about it, because you can show understanding. You can show empathy. You can take the pressure off. You can learn how to process your own emotions instead of reacting out of them and having everything backfire. That's what you can do. And it's incredibly effective. So let's go into taking action and responsibility as we build upon what's really going to work here to terminate your divorce process for good.
Yeah. So this is, you know, if your partner's feeling understood, you're able to listen to them, you still got to do something. I mean, some things have got to change. And a lot of this, if we're talking about like the story or the narrative within the relationship, this is another piece that builds up that hope. If your partner can see, hey, things are changing, my partner is taking my feedback and doing something with it. Well, I mean, there's typically a lot of reasons not to get a divorce then. But I'm going to just say right off the bat, this is absolutely, absolutely not going to be about just going on dates, getting them flowers, having more sex, or any number of other surface level solutions. And I cringe a little bit when I get clients that come in and they, you know, they'll say, hey, we went to a therapist already, it didn't work. And I'll ask, okay, well, what did they ask you to do? And they'll say, well, they told us to get out on some more dates. They told me to get my wife some flowers on occasion. I'm like, oh, okay, great. Not going to say don't do those things, but you know, I'm not surprised that things like that don't work. My opinion here is things like dates and flowers and sex are all symptoms of a healthy and happy relationship. They're the results of that. And if you just if you just try to inject some of those results into an unhealthy situation, it feels like trying to feed someone candy when they're malnourished as a mm-hmm. as a way to solve issues here, as a way to really, you know, really improve someone's health level or something. It feels weird.
That was said so well, giving candy to a malnourished person, because that's what we see people doing. And my friends, like, I talk to you here in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group on YouTube. I talk to you all the time, right? In masterclasses and stuff. And my heart breaks because I see how much so many of you really want this relationship to work, how much you really care for your wife or for your husband, and how you are exhausting yourself doing all of these things, you know, text messages, flowers, you know, wedding vows, movies from the past, right? All of these things, trying to go on dates, and you are working yourself to the ground, thinking that you're doing the right thing. And you have no clue that all these actions, working on yourself, all of those things are just completely backfiring. And you don't realize that they are not what's needed right now, because you haven't been given the right tools to know what's needed right now. And so, like Mark said, those are things are all going to be very surface level. They're going to be ineffective at best, and at worst, they're going to completely backfire and not work at all. So the goal is to address what was preventing that healthy and happy relationship in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of a beast. I like to say that you cannot read the label when you're inside the bottle. You guys may have heard me say that before. It's so, so true. We've got to uncover what's really going on here and what's actually going to be effective and not backfire.
So you mentioned there, like, part of the goal here is actually addressing what was preventing the healthy and happy relationship. And I think that's a big part of, like, taking some action. So, you know, when we're talking about this in the bigger scale of things, like, hey, maybe the complaint was there wasn't enough dates, but the reality here, like, why that was important is very likely, you know, your partner might have been saying, hey, this person doesn't value me. I'm not important mm-hmm. to them. Or, you know, I don't feel very connected. We are living this loveless relationship. And yes, maybe dates at one point would have helped, but it might not help right now. And so, like, it's always, like you said, you can't read the label when you're inside the bottle. I always kind of think that in this case, like, to do something here and actually figure out the right kind of actions, some professional help is needed. And I'm not just saying that to, like, say, hey, you know, come and get our help. But, like, if you're trying to instill some hope in the situation where your partner is considering divorce, if you just go about this and be like, hey, I think I'll work on this. I'll do some journaling and studying. It's not going to appear like you're taking it seriously. You know, coaching or therapy is a great way to demonstrate that you're serious about making some changes. And it's a good way to actually take a look at things and actually make those changes as well. But, you know, it's a good way to show your partner that you're serious. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're actually talking to someone who knows what they're doing, they're going to be really digging in deep here. They're going to, you know, I think you need to really be prepared to examine some of the patterns in your relationship that led to your relationship being this close to divorce. Why weren't you getting on those dates? Why weren't the flowers happening is a much better question than, you know, like all these other things, like, you know, or all these other suggestions or solutions where you're saying, well, just have more dates. I would much rather understand why the solution didn't happen 10 steps ago. Mm-hmm. And if you can address that, you're going to be able to instill a lot more hope here. You know, it's a lot deeper than saying, okay, we have too many arguments. It means looking at why there are lots of arguments and why no one was stopping them from happening. I don't know. Right. I maybe I'm just way out there. Maybe I'm thinking, you know, about this way too much. I mean, we do talk about this every day, Heather. maybe it's a lot more simple, but I don't know. For me, that seems like that would give me a lot more security in a situation like this, if my wife Jen was like, okay, I'm taking a look at this. Yes, we have a lot of arguments, hypothetically. And I want to address like why we're having arguments and get to the root of that. And, you know, here is the solution for that. That feels a lot better to me.
Right.
I don't know. What about you? Yeah.
Well, it's like peeling back the layers to get to the core of what's really going on. And what Mark and I have seen is that when you focus on the symptoms, you know, maybe you've read, okay, I'll give an example in my own life. I did the love dare. Okay. Mm. I just loved the concept of that. I was like, okay, I'm just going to like service my husband to death, right? I'm going to make him like see how much I care about him. And I'm going to do all this service for him. And the reality was, is that it was completely ineffective. Didn't necessarily backfire, but the root issues had nothing to do with service. It had nothing to do with me showing him and all these acts of kindness that I love him. The root issues had to do with nothing about that. It had to do with, I don't feel heard here. I don't feel respected. I don't feel like I have a voice in our relationship. I feel bulldozed and I feel like I've been made to be very small in our relationship. When I actually understood that that's where Ben was coming from, then those surface level things like totally went away and we can actually address what was actually going on underneath what was happening. So that's one of the challenges with some advice, like just end the affair. Just end the affair. If you just tell your partner to end the affair or you just end the affair, then everything will be fine. Mark and I have seen like couples that ended an affair 20 years ago and they're still having a hard time about it because they didn't solve it in the right way. They didn't uncover why the affair happened, that root cause. And then contrast that with our clients that have had affairs or, you know, major hurts or gone, you know, to the brink of divorce. And we uncover actually why it goes back to those six root emotional needs. And we realize we're wanting the same things. And then that gives you so much hope because you realize we can actually do something about this and it's actually going to work. It's not going to backfire here. So it's really important that we look at what's really going on underneath the surface. And again, that's typically going to take someone that knows what they're doing. For me, things that matter in my life, I want to go to mentors that are living the results that I want to have. Right? They may not be perfect. No, it's perfect, right? They don't make it perfect, but I like to go for people that are, you know, 10, 20, 100 steps above where I am so I can do what they're doing and I can see what worked for them and I can model after their journey, right? And that's how we're able to grow and learn from each other in this beautiful journey of life, right? Is going to people that know what they're doing. They know how to read the label on your bottle and they can prescribe to you exactly the right treatment to resolve this issue. And that's exactly what Mark and I do. Every day, all day, in and out, ICU for marriages, as we know how to read the label on your bottle. And that gives you comfort and helps you realize that you don't have to just be left to your own devices. You don't have to be like me thinking, oh, I'm just going to try this love dare thing or this love languages or what my therapist said. You know, you actually know what's really going to work. And instead of making all these positive changes yourself and hoping that convinces your spouse to come back to you somehow, or makes them want to come back, you actually know how to get them to hit this pause button. So they want to hit the pause button and they want to then start to take some steps towards you. And it's a beautiful, natural, genuine, authentic process. There's no hacks. It's genuine connection and it's healing with our souls. Like our souls are healed and the marriage itself is then healed as well, which is a very different way to look at things. Now, I just want to make one note. If your partner is checked out, not willing to work on the marriage with you, asking for a divorce or separation, and won't work on things with you, then this idea of getting help, professional help, is going to have to start with you at first. And most likely, if you ask your partner to join you, it's going to backfire. And again, that's where, I don't know, Mark, what would you say now? I would guess about 80, 85% of our clients start working on the marriage alone. Would you agree? What would you say the numbers are?
It might even be higher than that. I might be closer to like
90%. 90%, yeah. Okay. So a good amount, most of the majority of our clients start working on the marriage alone. And that breaks through one of those biggest myths that if your partner wants out, there's nothing you can do. It does. It absolutely shatters that myth. So if your partner isn't willing to get professional help and you are wanting to still save this, then you can do this on your own. And we've proven that it's true.
Yeah, I want to point out that I would say about 50% of my client load right now is actually couples. So compare that to 90% start on their own. It might even be higher than that, to 50% of my client load is I'm working with couples. I mean, we can get you to that point pretty well.
Right.
The other 50%, it's not saying that they won't get there. It's just right now I'm working with them to get them there.
Right. They're at stage one. They're starting out on their journey. And then these other couples are at stage two, three, four. Typically three and four is when your partner's going to actually come on board with you and want to work on things. And that is where we get a lot of couples too. So, all right, now.
Heather, we are. Class.
Sorry. Talking on top of
I think
of
there was
other.
A little time delay there.
Go ahead, I wanted Heather. I was just talking to a gentleman in a masterclass and he says, I have 120 days till the divorce is filed. What should I do? And the next piece of this process to terminate your divorce process for good is to ask for time. We need to buy some time here. And this is not to presume that you can ask for the divorce to end at this point, because it's not going to work. Asking for that is going to backfire. But your goal is to ask for time in order to heal things, in order to explore things. And we've seen that this works very, very well. And like with this gentleman, I said, if you can ask your spouse and we'll guide you on exactly how to ask that in the right way, so it doesn't backfire, for 6 months of time before they go forward with the divorce, 6 months of time to explore things, 6 months of time to experiment and see if this is what we really want to do before we rush into something we both might regret, right? We've proven that if you can get about 6 months of time to slow down the divorce process or pause the divorce process, then you have a great opportunity there to truly end it for good. But you cannot ask for it to end for good right now. I hope that you understand that really clearly as you're listening. If you've done that, what was your result? Probably not very good, right? Leave a comment. Let me know if you did that and how it went down so that other people can learn from what you did, right? I've seen it over and over again, and Mark has too. So we need to ask them to consider giving us some time to slow down this process. So Mark, things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the whole point of the podcast today is like, okay, well, how are we actually getting to this point where maybe it's not going to be a divorce anymore? It might not be exactly what you're looking for, maybe time, because you know, I'm sure you would much rather prefer for your partner to say, yes, I'm not going to do a divorce. It's all done. But that's, you know, I would absolutely recommend this as a step in between. You're going to be much better able to get there if you ask for time first. Now, why? The whole reason here is it's this amount of understanding for your partner. If they're saying divorce and you're saying no, well, that's way too many steps removed for there to really be much understanding, empathy, or compromise there. But if you can be like, it's going to be a much easier ask if you come somewhere in the middle and you say, okay, can we have some time? It's much easier to say yes to that. You're still addressing to some degree what your partner is looking for. Now, you might be able to get that time especially if you've been listening to the other steps here, and you're actually able to provide some understanding. You have these calm, measured responses. You're taking action and responsibility. But like, basically, you can ask for time if you have a plan to address what is hurting. Like, the big reason why someone might say no is if they feel like nothing's going to be different here. Nothing's going to change. It's just going to be the same thing at the end of 6 months as it is now. Well, who in their right mind would agree to some extra time if it's just going to prolong a bunch of hurt? Here, like, what we're trying to get at here is the goal right now isn't to get them back. It's not that. If you go into this and say, hey, I'm going to work as hard as I can to get you back, well, what is that? That's a focus on what you need. The goal here is to help them to feel better. And if you put that as your goal, say, hey, look, I want to make sure that we take the time to help you feel okay about this. Well, now you're focusing on them. And it's going to provide them a lot more security. You know, in a big way, you might do this. I mean, essentially what you're doing here is you're setting some boundaries in order to protect them. You're saying, okay, yeah, I'm going to consider this divorce thing, We're not going to completely take a step back from this. And so let's just have some time. I want to make sure that you feel protected here. You feel like what you're wanting is still considered. A lot of that push towards what they're wanting and what they're needing is going to provide that sense of security, that sense of understanding, that sense that you are working for them, which is what is needed if they're considering divorce. Now, this isn't the only piece here, Heather. There's a lot of different components to making a request. I don't know. What else are you thinking here? What else is needed if we're going to be asking for some time?
Yeah. So there has to be a compelling reason for them to wait on the divorce, right? And so as we're thinking that this really needs to serve them and what are they really needing here, how would putting off the divorce really serve them, right? Why would they have a compelling reason to want to give it some time and some space, right? Is putting a hold on the divorce, if it only helps you, why would they agree to it at all, right? So this means that often you might want to find some common goals. So Mark, I know you've worked with a lot of couples. Can you give us some examples of what some of those common goals might be?
Well, here's the thing. I think some of these goals work in some cases, sometimes not. You're going to have a mixture of this. But sometimes if you're saying, hey, let's have some time, I'm going to work on making things better. But, in the meantime, I want to make sure that this doesn't disrupt the kids' lives. Let's prepare a bit. That might be one common goal, making things better for your kids. It might be hey, I want to make sure that we come out of this feeling healthy, even if the decision is divorce. So I'm going to take a look at this. I would like you to really examine this with your therapist as well. Let's take some time to understand this. And if at the end of 6 months, you still want a divorce, fine. Okay. So it might be about healing, it might be about kids, it might be about healing. It might be about, maybe there's a lot of tension and there's some desire to maintain some amount of friendship. Well, I know a lot of people who really wouldn't feel comfortable being friends with their ex if it got to a divorce. So maybe some things need to be worked out. So it may be about wanting to maintain some level of the relationship, even though things are really rocky right now. We could go on and on. It could be about making sure that you do it right, that the finances are in order. It could be about, making sure that the other person can settle their life and prepare for separation or whatever it happens to be. But I know a lot of these goals sound like it's moving closer to divorce. At the same time, it also buys time. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, hey, I'm going to try to fix things, and here's this little nugget here where we can work towards something that you're looking for as well. Much, much, much easier to say yes to that because you are considering their needs at the same time. And, so if you're working with them, it's really hard to argue with someone who's working for your own goals. Mm-hmm. People have a really hard time doing it. Just think about it. If someone's saying, I want to help you, why would you be fighting against them? It just doesn't make sense.
Right. As long as you're doing it in this way with no pressure, no alternative motive.
Ulterior.
There yes. You go. Thank you.
Is it ulterior or ulterior? With a U or an A? I'm blanking on that for a moment.
I'm
you
not
guys
even
can correct
try
my grammar
point.
In the comments. I think it's ulterior with a U.
Right. But when you do it in the right way, then they will sense that you're doing this is from a place of genuine care with no pressure. If they sense any whiff of manipulation here, it will send them running back to the hills, which is why we guide you on exactly how to have that conversation and how to be in the right emotional place yourself so that it doesn't backfire. So when, Mark, might separation be appropriate in this phase? Because oftentimes we hear people talk about the 45-day no contact rule or mm-hmm. that separation and time and space are good. And sometimes it's really not, if that's in and of itself the only thing you're doing. But sometimes it can be. And that's why it's important to know for sure from an expert whether it's appropriate for you or not.
Yeah. So I was saying, if you're trying to offer them something in, I'm going to say in exchange for time, I wouldn't think of it as an exchange, but you know, you're trying to address some of their needs. Separation might be something that you can offer. I do get a lot of people asking me, you know, when is it appropriate to separate? When is it good to have, like, say, 30 days of no contact? And I would say that, you know, especially if your partner is feeling like they need to step away in order to feel okay, or there's a lot of tension, a lot of your interactions are being interpreted negatively. Basically, I'm looking at where the momentum of the relationship is going. If, like, you keep getting a little bit more distant, a little bit more angry, a little bit more tense, then separation might be something that you want to consider. And I would think most of you would agree, between separation and divorce, most of you would probably prefer separation. In the context of all of this, if your partner is asking for divorce and you're saying, well, let's try out some separation for right now, it allows your partner to feel like their request is being honored, at least in part. It may mean that there won't be as much urgency to process the divorce if, you know, you're able to settle a lot of that tension for right now. So basically here, you know, you might be able to provide them a lot of extra security if you go the separation route, because, you know, you're saying, hey, I'm going to work on things. Let's, you know, make sure the kids are really feeling settled before we actually finally pull the trigger with divorce. And in the meantime, I'm going to fix X, Y, and Z, and we can reduce this tension with separation. I'm going to say, though, that if that's something that you're considering, really consider some professional feedback on that sort of decision, because there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of different things that go into the decision of whether to separate or not that may work for you or may work against you. There's just too many to cover right this instant.
Right. And so if you, I see some comments and people are wanting to know, okay, how do we get that help from you all? And that's a great question. So the first step is to fill out a form and get on a free consultation with us, with Mark and I personally. And you can do that at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And you can talk to us or one of our great coaches here as well. So that brings us now to our marriage mythbuster, which goes really well with what we've been talking about this whole time. If my spouse wants a divorce, there's nothing I can do. And we touched on this, Mark. We talked about how it can feel like they're holding all the cards and you might feel really hopeless. You might feel like everything you're doing isn't working anyway. So maybe you should just move on, right? And you might feel like there's nothing that you can do. So I'm going to bust this myth, and then Mark, anything you want to add would be more than welcome. But I'm going to share with you, as promised in the beginning, our three ingredients to get started. So maybe at this point you're like, okay, Heather and Mark, wow, I learned some things that I was doing at the beginning here that are just mistakes. I realize I've been reacting. I've been blaming or criticizing or demanding they work on the marriage. I've been putting pressure on my spouse. I've been begging, pleading, desperate. And I realize those things aren't working. Got it. Okay. So Heather told me I need to process my emotions. Cool. How do I get started with that? Maybe you're saying, okay, awesome. I see that I need to increase some understanding here and that I need to have these calm, measured responses, that I need to find some common goals, that I need to take some action and get some professional help, right? I see that I maybe need to ask for time. We covered a lot, and there's a lot to this. That's why most people don't ever hit that pause button, because society hasn't taught you how, and what you have been doing up until now hasn't been working. If they haven't hit the pause button, then there's something you missed along the way. The good news is there's really only three things that you need to get started. We talked about a lot, but I'm going to simplify it for a little bit, because this is what we found is completely true. The only thing that you really need right now that is absolutely in your power and in your control is, first, decide what you want. You decide what you want. No one else gets to choose that for you. You are the only one that gets to decide what you really want. And sometimes we're so focused on everything we don't want that we're like a boat on the ocean just being tossed about by the waves. And we have no direction, and we're just kind of letting life happen to us. And I see that happen with a lot of us, and I've been there myself. And when you do that, life has a tendency to just rip you to shreds. Like, the things that I'm going through personally right now could have the ability to rip me to shreds if I didn't choose deliberately where I wanted to go. when you choose that destination and you say, this is where I want my marriage to be 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now, then you make that powerful decision and then the wave will make itself manifest. So my friends, as you're listening to us, let me know in the comments, where do you want your marriage to be? Decide it and then declare it. Declare, this is what the relationship I want to have in my life. This is how I want to feel. This is where I want us to be. This is what I want to look like, feel like. This is what I want us to talk about. Get detailed about where you want to go. You choose the destination, okay? And then commit to get there. Tune out all the other voices, the voices of fear, the voices of impossibility, the voices of fear inside yourself. Everyone telling you should just quit, you should just move on. If something inside of you is saying, I need to do this, then you commit to get there. And what we've seen is that those are the most two important things that you need to bring to the table. And then the third makes it all happen. So you decide where you want to go. You commit to get there. And then you receive guidance from someone who knows how to help you get there. Think about like the hero's journey. We hear about this and you're probably very familiar with this in movies and stories. Think about Lord of the Rings, right? The hero here is not a hero yet. They're a very common person with a lot of, you know, frailties, a lot of, you know, weaknesses and a lot of self-doubt. And for whatever reason, a great quest is called upon them, right? Think about Frodo or Bilbo, right? And this great quest is put upon them and they're called to action. They're called to greatness. They're called to overcome some challenge. And my friends, you've been called. Life is giving you an opportunity to overcome a hellish challenge right now in your life. And you get to decide what you're going to do about it. And you may have that wavering, like all those characters do. Can I really do this? Am I really good enough? All of those things. And then you decide, I am going to do this. I am going to take up the call to greatness here. I am not going to let these challenges crumble me and crush me and turn me into a victim. I'm going to expand in the face of adversity. I'm going to overcome and become who I'm really meant to be. And I'm going to not let these obstacles define me, but let them grow and refine me. Ooh, that sounded good. I just made that up. If you want to quote that, go ahead. And so then what happens when the character makes the commitment to rise up to the call to action here and to take on this quest is that then they receive guidance, right? It might be in the form of Gandalf or in the form of Dumbledore, right? We see these guidance figures come in, these mentors that give support and wisdom and encouragement and give direction. So my friends, I can promise you that when you decide where you want to go and you bring that level of commitment, that is the work that only you can do. I can't make you do it. Mark can't make you do it. No one can make you do that. But when our clients come to us and they've decided where they want to go and they've made that commitment, that is the most important thing that you can do at the beginning. And without it, there's nothing that you, there's no guidance in the world that could possibly get you there. If you don't know where you want to go and you're not committed to get there, then that is the recipe for failure. But the recipe for success is deciding where you want to go, committing to get there. And when you decide where you want to go, we will help you get there. So I'm going to be doing an attraction CPR masterclass this Thursday. If you're watching live this week, then you have the opportunity to join. If you're watching the replay later, then my apologies that the event is happening this Thursday, February, I believe it's 10th. Yes, February 10th. Yeah. And if you want in on that, I'm only opening this special training up to 100 people. First come, first serve. We have over 40,000 people in the group. We have massive email list of several, you know, tens of thousands of people as well. And we have our YouTube audience. So I'm sure that the spots are going to fill up very, very quickly. So if you want in on the attraction CPR training that I will be doing, then go ahead and leave a comment and say CPR. Just those three letters, CPR, because we need to get some blood pumping back into your marriage if they're wanting a divorce. So go ahead and leave that in the comments and I'll make sure that the first 100 people that comment, I will get you the registration link so that you can get in. It will be capped at 100 people only. All right. So that is our marriage myth buster. You can do it. And there is more that is within you than you can possibly realize. So you want the first steps. You can do that today. You can do it right now. So if you're with me, then let me know. My friends, there are so many people that are choosing not to believe the programming of society anymore. They're choosing not to believe that marriages just have to end in divorce or that they're going to be happy with someone else. One of the things that we talk about is divorce the pattern, not the person. That was given to me by my mentor. Divorce the pattern, but not the person. And there are more and more people that are rising up to make an incredible shift in the world so that society no longer programs us to fail, but we can create a world where marriages and families truly, truly thrive. And if you haven't gotten on that ship yet, then you need to get on it quickly. Because as we know with Noah, if you don't get on the boat in time, it's not going to go well for you. But there are more and more people that are getting on that ship, and we're creating a whole different reality and doing amazing things. And I love having every single one of you as part of that journey. So that is it for today. Thank you so much, Mark, for coming. If you guys liked this video, give us a thumbs up. Leave a comment about what stood out to you. Make sure you subscribe for more great videos so that we can help you. Let us know in the comments what you'd love for us to cover next. And next week, Mark, you want to share what we're going to talk about?
Let's see. We're going to be talking about three things to never say to your spouse.
And how you might
we could all use that sometime.
So thank you so much, Mark, and we will see you all next time.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.